Welcome to another edition of Flea Market Fantasy, the world's second greatest Bronze Age era comic book podcast. Joining me, as always, is new Mike L. Kevin Jack. That's the
X-Men theme song. Yeah,
yeah.
The animated series.
Well, today we're doing Uncanny X-Men issue 194 from 1985.
Yeah. I like what a time to be alive.
I like this era of the X-Men. I started reading it with issue 207, and then I quickly went back and bought all the back issues I could find. So
is all the recent ones.
Yeah, all these issues remind me of my childhood, and I love it.
Yeah, there's some good stuff here. There's some less good stuff here. Like the whole, like, let's fight a weird magic wizard guy. It's like, I don't know.
Well,
what can do without those.
That was weird. Yeah.
Yeah.
Weird. What was that guy's name? I don't know. But this wizard took over New York City.
Maybe or something like Ron Garth, something like that.
Something like that. Yeah, and Spider-Man was involved. That was a few issues before this, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But anyway, before we get started on this X-Men, let's remind everybody, if you're watching on YouTube, please like and subscribe. We're up to 184 subscribers. I think we picked up one from last week.
One a week now, yeah. Sprinting towards the finish line.
I think we were at 185, and then someone came to their senses.
Ooh.
And now we're down to 184. but yeah, Power Girl's not doing well. Not doing well.
I saw that, yeah. I don't know. Sometimes we do these random characters, and they take off, but sometimes no.
Yeah, not so much.
Not at all.
So we're going back to the well with the X-Men, because they usually perform gangbusters for us. So we'll see what happens. Hey. But, all right, so Uncanny X-Men issue 194, the writer here, of course, is Chris Claremont, and the artist is John Romita Jr.
Many, many issues straight.
Yeah, as we've talked about Claremont many times on here, but yeah, he is the X-Men, and everything you like about the X-Men, it's pretty much because of Chris Claremont. And the artist, John Romita Jr., this is kind of in the middle of his run, and he started with issue 175 in 1983. Mm-hmm. Actually, the first X-Men book he did was X-Men Annual 4 in 1980. And then he became the regular 175. And when I got 207, my first issue, that was Wolverine dragging the claws down the front of the cover. That was a classic John Romita. And then he did up to 211. And then after that, they had a bunch of fill-in artists for a few issues.
Yeah. Yeah, Barry Windsor Smith did a couple. There was some randos.
Yeah, I remember Brett Blevins did. I think Alan Davis maybe did one or two. But then Mark Silvestri came in as the new regular.
Mark Silvestri.
Yeah,
that's pretty solid.
Love Mark Silvestri, too. But what a run Romita had here, though.
Yeah, and then he came back to Uncanny X-Men kind of later on, around like 300-ish.
He only did a handful.
That stuff I didn't like as much. Like, I like this version of the X-Men that he did much better.
I agree.
Whereas I kind of have the opposite feeling of Spider-Man. Like, his 80s Spider-Man was good. It's not the best, but like his 90s Spider-Man, I really like.
Yeah, he came back issue 287 and then 300 to 302, 304, 306 to 311.
Yeah.
So, 92 to 1994.
Boy, Joe Madd started.
After he left this first run on X-Men, I believe he went to Daredevil then. With
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah.
He did that Man Without Fear limited series with Frank Miller.
Yep.
A lot of Daredevil.
He's a great artist, and I love his run here on X-Men. So this story, the reason I picked this one is because it's got Juggernaut.
Yeah. I don't know if it's the classic Juggernaut
but
tale.
It's
kind
pretty
of great. Tangentially.
I love it.
He's just trying to go to the bank.
Yes, like, Juggernaut is going to the bank. Why do you think he's at the bank? He wants to get a loan? Is that what's happening here? He's at the bank.
Yeah.
Taking care of some
business. He wants to open up like his own ice cream truck and maybe just needs a small business loan.
Maybe they're giving away free toasters for a checking account.
Yeah. One of those football shaped phones. Really wants it.
Yeah, that's what Juggernaut's doing here in this issue. And this issue also has Nimrod in it. So Nimrod. This is not his first appearance. A couple issues earlier he popped up and introduced him. But this is his first main real appearance, I would say. All right, so
that story got weird. Like he's like a robot from the future, but he decided to work as like a construction guy for a little while.
Yeah,
like,
we'll get into that. we'll get into that. But let's talk some Juggernaut here. His real name's Kane Marco, and his first appearance was X-Men issue 12, 1965, created by Stan Lee, Jack Kirby, and Alex Toth. So yeah, Alex Toth has him in this. And he and Charles Xavier are stepbrothers.
That's right.
Will Ferrell and that other guy.
Did we just become best friends?
They were not best friends.
No, not so much. It was more like the first part of Step Brothers, where they just hated each other.
So, Kane Marco there, his dad married Xavier's mom.
Yep.
And Marco's dad was also, like, partners with Xavier's dad.
Yeah, like they both, I think, worked at, like, Los Alamos, kind of doing nuclear testing and stuff like that, which kind of, I think, may have caused Professor Xavier's mutation.
Oh, there you go, yeah. And his dad died, and there is some talk. Was it ever proven that maybe Marco's dad had a hand in it?
I don't know if it was ever proven. I certainly wouldn't put it past him. He seems like a shady guy.
Yeah, because little Kane brings it up. He
swooped in real quick to get that Mrs. Xavier.
Because the Xaviers had money, and he moved, the Marcos moved in, or, yeah, whatever. They moved in with the Xaviers in their mansion, and he was a little Kane Marco there was a bully to Charles, you know?
Yeah, because his dad was a complete asshole. Like, pretty much all his life, his dad had been abusive, and then once he, you know, became Charles Xavier's stepfather, he was like, hey, this kid's great. Why aren't you more like this kid? So Kane Marco did not take that well.
Yeah, and I guess at one point he little Juggernaut there, he made a reference that his dad was responsible for killing Xavier's dad or somehow. So then that he got real mad. He started smacking around Kane Marco. And that just made Marco hate Charles even more.
Yep. Yep.
And I don't know.
Reading rivalry between these kids.
If I went back and I looked at that issue 12, their first issue. And, you know, they're telling this whole story. And then they show, like, Charles Xavier's, like, thriving in high school, and you know he's an athlete, he's on the track team and all, you know,
still got his hair.
Well, no, at that point he didn't, which was weird. Like when he was a kid, he had the hair, and then by the time he's winning those races in high school, he's bald. And I'm like, well, they never even mentioned why he was bald. He's just bald.
I guess it's his powers. Like somehow he can't also have hair.
His brain is too
brain
powerful.
Powers. Yeah. I don't know why Jean Grey gets to keep hers. But
so anyway, then Kane Marco and Charles Xavier, they end up serving in the same army unit in the Korean War.
Yeah. They don't care about your rivalries. The draft takes everyone.
What are the odds? So, well, they're in Korea. They come under fire, and Kane Marco, he deserts the unit. He turns yellow, and he runs off, and he comes upon a cave, some mysterious cave there in Korea. Yeah. And what was it called? The you know the name of this Temple of Sidorak, right?
Yes, Sidorak. Yeah.
And what did he do, Jack? He touched a mystical ruby, right?
Yep. There's a giant gem there. And he's like, hey, this looks great. I'm going to take it. And he touched it and became the Juggernaut. He had this giant set of armor. He got a lot bigger and stronger than he was before. He was already pretty jacked, but now he's like, you know,
yeah, he's huge now. Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's some sort of like inscription on the ruby, like whoever touches this gets the power of the Juggernaut or something.
Yeah, that's right.
So has the Juggernaut. He's just invulnerable. He's unstoppable. He's just can't hurt him.
Yeah, he kind of from time to time it varies. I feel like because sometimes they're like, oh, he's got like a force field around him too that won't let you touch him, but yet they always seem to be able to get his helmet off. So clearly, it's not preventing them from getting that off.
Yeah, it might be like a skin tight force field. I don't know how they. But I've also seen
I know Shatterstar at one point like stuck a sword in his eye. Yeah.
So yeah, the whole force field thing.
Through there.
About.
I don't know.
But the only way the X-Men ever beat him is because he's vulnerable to psionic attacks or like brainwaves. So, but that's why he wears
that helmet off because the helmet blocks his brain.
Yeah, so they always have to, like in the first story where he fought the Juggernaut, the Human Torch actually came in, and he melted the bolts on the helmet, and then I think Angel flew down, ripped off the helmet, and then Xavier.
Oh, Angel actually did something for once. Good for him.
That's how they got him. But yeah, every time the X-Men face the Juggernaut, it's always a race to get that helmet off. We got to get that helmet off, and then we can win. But otherwise, we're screwed. So,
Or you do like what Spider-Man did, and like lure him into a construction site where they're pouring a giant cement foundation and just let him sink. And then,
he eventually gets out because he's the Juggernaut. But it takes a while,
Yep, sure does.
Yeah, he's pretty great, the Juggernaut. Now, in later years, does like Colossus become the Juggernaut or something?
Yeah, like Juggernaut goes through all kinds of things. In the 90s, at one point, when Marvel bought out Malibu Comics, there was, I don't know if there was an existing comic called The Exiles, but then there was this all new Exiles book that basically they brought over three characters from the regular Marvel universe into the Malibu universe, one of which was Juggernaut. And he was like kind of leading this team of superheroes over there.
Wow, that's weird.
Didn't last very long, but like then he came back and he was basically beat up. Like you see him, he's been knocked from like New Jersey to New York or something like that. And you're like, oh, something big and powerful must have hit this guy if he could knock him that far. He's a Juggernaut. And he's like Onslaught. So that was kind of the first hint that Onslaught was coming. And he eventually works with Jean Grey to figure out who Onslaught is. And, you know, Onslaught turned out to be Professor Xavier. So that's why he was going at Juggernaut, I guess. But then eventually, like in the 2000s, the Juggernaut kind of reformed. Like he was like, hey, Charles, I'm going to put aside our differences and I'm going to be a good guy now. I think he stood trial. I think She-Hulk like was his attorney. And I think he ended up having sex with She-Hulk as well. She was like, I like the cut of your jib. And so then he joined the X-Men for a while. And I guess basically because he was being good and not, you know, causing destruction, Sidorak, the being inside of the gem, was not happy. So that's how they kind of nerfed him so he could be a hero. Because it's like, if your guy is this such, like, this invulnerable, it's hard to have him be the hero of a book because, you know, what's going to stop him? Superman. So they had to kind of make him less, yeah, exactly.
That's why I hate Superman.
Make him less strong. So they kind of had, like, you know, he only had half of his power or something like that. So they kind of nerfed him a little bit. And then during this one event called Fear Itself, where I think it was like Thor's uncle, like rained down a bunch of hammers, like enchanted
Thor's uncle.
Yeah, his ne'er-do-well uncle came back and was like, I'm going to bestow Earth with a bunch of other, you know, mystical hammers, kind of like Thor's, that will give the user, you know, extreme power. And like I think it was either 7 or 9, something like that. But Juggernaut ended up with one of them. And so he became this super, you know, special, super powerful version of the Juggernaut. And I guess Sidorak didn't like that. So Colossus, to defeat this new Juggernaut, had to make a deal with Sidorak. Like, hey, I'll be your new Juggernaut if you, you know, you give me the power instead of him. And Sidorak's like, oh, okay, cool. And so he abandoned the Juggernaut, came Marco, and became Colossus for a little bit. And it didn't last a whole, very long, I would say, before he was done with that. And then Kane Marco got it back again.
I like how, they got those powers back in the Korean War. Yeah, 2024, they're still going strong, they just.
Yep.
Do they just keep updating the war? Like, oh, it happened in Iraq. He found it.
Yeah. I don't know how they do that with, like, Magneto, like.
Yeah.
Magneto's got to be like unable to move by now. He's so old.
But yeah, I love the Juggernaut, and he's one of my favorites. Hey, remember in the movie, they have Vinnie Jones playing him in the movie? Is that guy?
That's right. Where we get the famous, I'm Juggernaut, bitch. They stole it from that YouTube video.
Do you have any favorite Juggernauts issues that come to mind? Like, is that Spider-Man one your favorite? Or
that Spider-Man one's great. I remember there was he fought Spider-Man later in the 90s where, again, it was a John Romita Jr. book. I remember just liking the look of it. I don't remember the story being anything spectacular, but I liked the way he drew him in that one. The Onslaught stuff was pretty good because it's Joe Madureira, who I love. He does a good Juggernaut, so I like that. And then probably that one we talked about, I don't know if it was on the show last week or not, but we talked about the one where Colossus runs into him at a bar and they get into like a bar fight. That's one that I always remember very fondly.
And that fight ended up saving Juggernaut's life because Selene, the Black Queen, was there, and she was about to pick him up and sap out his life force. But
I wonder if if that would work on him.
Yeah, I don't know. That would be interesting. But
That would be an interesting experiment.
Be sneaky. And I think last week we also mentioned the one, I think around issue 214 or 17, 18, somewhere around there, where like Dazzler, Longshot, Rogue, and Psylocke fight him. And I like
which,
that.
By
a
the
lot
way,
too.
During his reformed days, he was on a new version of Excalibur where him and Dazzler had to be a team together.
So. Dazzler is on Excalibur too?
Yeah. It was a very weird thrown together team.
Yeah.
I think it was basically just Captain Britain was like the only person from the old Excalibur at that point.
Yeah. All right. So there's your juggernaut.
Him and Black Tom had some good appearances in the early Deadpool limited series. Like they appear in both of the first two limited series before he ended up getting his ongoing book.
Yeah, we should mention Black Tom Cassidy, who is Sean Cassidy's evil brother, right? Banshee?
Yep. Yeah.
So you have Banshee's evil brother, Charles Xavier's evil stepbrother. They join forces, and they fight the X-Men early on in the new era of the X-Men.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe issues 103, 102, somewhere around there.
Yeah, right around the original Phoenix saga.
It was before that. It was a couple years after that. But yeah, Dave Cockrum was still the artist, I remember. And there's like a castle that... I think this was taking place in Ireland, I believe, right?
Yeah, I think it's Cassidy Keep, like their the ancestral home.
Yeah, Black Tom Cassidy. They were like running mates for a while there, always getting into trouble.
Good buddies. I think they still are. Like, I want to say that they still are pretty close.
Yeah.
Never seen either of them with a woman. But
how dare you, She-Hulk, put that to rest.
Yeah, that's right.
But I think I was flipping through a bunch of old X-Men back issues, and I believe there's one where Juggernaut and Black Tom Cassidy, they hire Arcade to kill the X-Men or do something to the X-Men. I don't know. They're always out to get those X-Men.
This is weird. Like, you're the Juggernaut. Why do you need to hire a
well, because every time he fights them, they knock his helmet off and zap his brain. Like, what can he do, you know?
Yeah. Well, he does have a secret up his sleeve in this one. Got two helmets.
Well, yeah, he did start wearing the two helmets. The little skull cap and then the big bucket on his head. But, all right, so that's Juggernaut. Now Nimrod, first appearance, Uncanny X-Men 191 from 1984, created by Claremont and Romita Jr. And he's basically a sentinel from the future. He's a robot from the future. He's like the
sentinel. Yeah. Basically from the same, like, Days of Future Past timeline that Rachel
comes from. He's from that Earth. I think it's like 818 or something weird like that. But that's the Earth he's from. So Days of Future Past, that's Nimrod's Earth. And in that story, Rachel Summers was actually, that's her first appearance. I think myself and a lot of people forget that. But she first appeared in Days of Future Past. She was the one who put Kate Pryde back into the past with her brain powers. So, but anyway, in that future Earth, later on, all the X-Men get wiped out there, but Rachel Summers and Kate Pryde, that Earth's Kitty Pryde, they go into the Sentinel plant, and they try to destroy all the Nimrod Sentinels or whatever, but Kate Pryde gets killed, and then Rachel Summers goes back into the past.
Mm-hmm.
And she ends up on our world. So instead of going into the past of her own world, she somehow jumped timelines and came into our world. And this Nimrod, because they were going to make many of them. I don't know. Maybe he was the only one at the time. I don't know. But anyway, he followed her as well, and he ended up in our world. And he didn't know. Like, he thought they was in the same timeline, and then it started to come together. Oh, wait, I'm in a different timeline. And in issue 191.
They always tried to play fast and loose with it, that it could be the future of the Marvel Universe.
Yeah, because, well, they
timeline with Senator Kelly at one point, but, you know, that could still happen. Like, they were still always doing, hey, the Sentinels, people are working on Sentinels, Project Wide Awake and whatever, all that stuff. Like, they kept hinting, oh, this could still be coming down the road.
Yeah, because you don't
take
remember.
Another shot at him or something like that, just because they failed one time.
Yeah, for those who don't remember Days of Future Past, Senator Kelly, he's the guy who signs this bill to authorized Sentinel production or whatever to hunt down mutants or something.
Yeah.
So in that Kate Pryde's timeline, that'll happen. So they sent her mind back to the past to inhabit our Kitty Pryde's body. And she gets the X-Men to prevent the assassination of Senator Kelly by the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants. Mystique was going to kill him, right? I think she was going to shoot him. And so that diverted the timeline and theoretically saved the future. But yeah, they always got to keep that up their sleeve. Any tech now, those Sentinels could be bang, mass production. Look out.
This could be exactly where we're heading.
But anyway, Nimrod is now in our world. And in issue 191, we first meet him. There's a guy, I believe his name is Javier Rodriguez. And I think this is actually 191 is when that evil sorcerer took over New York and everything. This was at the end of that issue. 190 and 191 was a two-parter, I think. And so at the end of that issue, we just see this. I think his name was Javier Rodriguez. I don't know. But he's just waiting for a subway, and two muggers come on him, and they're going to kill him there. And Nimrod shows up and kills the muggers to save the guy. And, you know, Nimrod's this giant pink robot.
Yeah.
He's very, very clear that he's a robot. But this Javier fella, he befriends Nimrod. And he takes him home.
Just like Short Circuit.
Yeah, pretty much. And so then the next time we see Nimrod, he's living in this Javier guy's house. And you see Javier talking to, I don't know if it's his uncle or somebody. And he's like, hey, I don't like that new guy you got staying here. And he's like, he's a good guy. He's a good bloke, you know. He saved me from the muggers. He's no problem. And he goes, yeah, but he looks a little weird. And then we cut in the bedroom and we see Nimrod like hunched over a computer and he's typing away. And you see his face. And he now looks like a human, but he's still a pink robot. And he's wearing like a t-shirt and he's got hair or something, but his face is still the face of a pink robot. What is going on?
He's a bulky dude. Like, he's pretty much Juggernaut size. So why did they have a t-shirt that would fit this guy?
Well, he's shrunk down. Like, he's shaped like a human now.
Oh, but he's got that weird.
Yeah, he's not like a giant robot. Yeah, but he's got the robot head. It looks more human, but it's still a pink robot head. And he's typing in the computer, and he pieces it all together that, oh, yeah, I'm in a different timeline. I'm in a different Earth. But my prime directive is still the same, protect humans from mutants. So he's like, you know what? Mutants must die. And that's what gets us to this issue. This is like his first attempt to go out and start murdering mutants or apprehending mutants.
And his prime target becomes the Juggernaut, who's not even a mutant. So, I don't know. He's way off mission here.
That is a good point. Yeah, technically, you never know. Maybe he has a latent mutant gene. But, yeah, technically, he gets his powers from a mystical ruby. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's close enough for old Nimrod. He's not scared. But anyway. So,
He also decides that, you know, while I'm trying to take down all the mutants, let me also get a job because I got to be a contributing member of society.
Well, yeah, that Javier guy's a construction worker, so he's piling around Javier and he gets him a job at working with him. So weird.
Yeah. It's very weird. Why would he care about any of this?
Anyway, later on, we'll see Nimrod fights the X-Men here. Then he comes back, I believe, it's another good issue, 205, I think. 206?
205 stuff happens?
Yeah, 205 is the classic Wolverine, Barry Windsor Smith. 206, I think, is Nimrod.
Yeah, there's like the cover of like kind of the X-Men on one side and the Hellfire Club on the other side, and they're kind of, you know, running at each other.
Yeah, you know what? The one I'm thinking, I'm messing up my numbering here. Maybe that's 204. I don't know. One of those issues is Nimrod comes back. All right. And the Hellfire Club's there, yeah. And they fight Nimrod in like Central Park, I believe. And and Nightcrawler gets messed up from that, I recall. Because he tries to do what Rogue does in this issue. So Nimrod, they defeat him there.
208 is the one, I think.
208?
Yeah.
It's a two-parter, right? 208, 209. And then 209 is Colossus and Nimrod on the cover, and he's fighting him, like wrestling him.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so, but then Nimrod goes away for a while, and I think, is it the next time he becomes...
the next time is after the X-Men have died, and they're living in Australia, and think Rogue at this time, she is like kind of letting Miss Carol Danvers' personality, who's still locked inside of her, is kind of taken over, and she's kind of just using Rogue's body.
Yeah.
I think her and maybe Dazzler or Psylocke, one of them, they're out having lunch or whatever. And I think that's when Nimrod kind of merges with Master Mold.
And Master Mold is the giant robot who makes Sentinels, right?
Yeah, from our time. So he kind of uses Nimrod to kind of upgrade himself. And it all ends with that whole mess, the merging of those two robots going through the Siege Perilous, that old thing that kept, you know, everyone kept going through in that era of the X-Men.
And the Siege Perilous is some like mystical portal where you go through and you're kind of like reborn. You go through.
Yeah.
That's how Psylocke became Asian. She yep. went through the Siege Perilous. Yeah.
Although it turns out, yeah, they kind of retconned that later on, where it's like, oh, like she went through it, but then like Spiral grabbed her and took her to her body shop or whatever, and she was kind
of, oh, I had no idea.
Yeah.
And of course, Spiral is we got to explain everything. Is how many arms did she have? Six arms.
Six. Yeah.
And she was Mojo's buddy, and she was also in the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants for a while, right?
That's right. Or Freedom Force by that point, I think.
Yeah. I like when they're called Freedom
Government,
Force.
Government, yeah.
All right, yeah, but they merge and they go through that Siege Perilous and they become Bastion, Master Mold.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, there was a big, that was a big part of the 90s, kind of mid-90s, mid to late 90s, I would say, was there was this guy called Bastion who had started a new Sentinel program and like, he was really getting a lot of government support. And he seemed very mysterious and seemed like he had powers that were more than human. But you know, he definitely hated mutants, so it's like, well, what is this guy then? And so then they eventually did reveal that, oh yeah, this is, you know, the Nimrod Master Mold thing. Once it went through the Siege Perilous, it was kind of reborn as a almost human but partially robot guy. So he made a bunch of new Sentinels that were basically, he took real people and like gave them cyborg attachments, but not all the time. Like they could shift from being completely human to like, you know, cyborgs. And there was a whole crossover called Operation Zero Tolerance where they were just going after mutants hardcore.
Oh. Hey, you know, my favorite Bastion story was when I just found out he existed when I was researching this issue. I'd never heard of him in my life.
Bastion. Yeah, he was a big deal in the 90s there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why I'm glad you're here, Jane, because I have no concept of anything after like 1987. All right.
Right there. I was like, oh, yeah, give me more Bastion.
There are a couple other villains in this book, though, Jack. Yeah. Did you recognize them?
Oh, yeah, the Von Struckers.
That's right. Andrea and Andreas Von Strucker, the children of Baron Von Strucker. Together, they're known as Fenris.
F-E-N-R-I-S.
Like an 80s pop synth group. Fenris. And, yeah, the kids
are very cool, like sunglasses, like 80s sunglasses. That would make them a lot better.
And, well, they were still in utero. They were bioengineered by Dr. Arnim Zola to have superpowers, but they're kind of like the Wonder Twins. They only work if they're touching each other. They have to be touching each other, and they can fly and shoot like plasma beams. That's what they do.
Yep.
Fenris. So.
They should have probably done that in this issue, but. Some reason they chose not.
They were too far apart.
Yeah.
They weren't touching. Yeah. Andreas was too busy getting handsy with the lady. And then, but we'll get there in a minute. So, yep. All right, there's the backstory for this issue. I think we're ready now. Jank, why don't you
talk about the issue?
Yeah, why don't you describe the cover for us?
It's a pretty classic cover. I like it for the most part. But we got the corner box up there with just pictures of all the X-Men's heads. Even Cyclops, even though he's not really a part of this book at the moment. Storm's also not part of the team, but she's in the book, so at least you got that.
Yeah, run down the other ones so people know what era we're here.
Yeah, we got Wolverine, we got Shadow Cat in a costume that she probably only wore once because she did that a lot.
Still the sprite costume.
Like, yeah.
Like even Nimrod, I think, refers to her as sprite in this. Like, I don't know.
He called her Ariel, which
is another
old one. Yeah. Kitty Pryde did not know what she was doing early on, through a lot of phases.
Doesn't Wolverine reference like the adventures he had with Kitty? Like, so this is after
Must be right after that, yeah, because he's still talking about, like, oh, we just got back from Japan.
So it must be, like, right now she starts being called Shadow Cat, because...
Yeah.
Right? So I don't
know. Got some that anyway. Then we got Colossus and Nightcrawler and Rogue.
Yeah.
They're still kind of short hair at this point.
Yeah, I like this team. This is, I like, Rogue. Like, get Cyclops out of there, and I love this team. And he's out of there, right?
I mean, he should be out there, yeah. Yeah, they should put Rachel Summers in there, but I guess she hasn't been officially made a member of the team.
Yeah, what issue did she first pop up? 184, somewhere around there?
Yeah, I'd say right around there.
So maybe 10 issues into her run?
Yeah, she should be in.
Yeah, she doesn't totally become, like, she taps into the old Phoenix. Because Rachel Summers, for those who don't remember, in that other world, she was also the daughter of Jean Grey and Cyclops, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah. She's so, always kind of worried now because she's like, oh, I'm never going to be born here because Jean Grey's dead.
Yeah.
Like, little does she know.
Yeah, she doesn't know how comic books work.
Won't last long.
But in issue 199, she taps into the Phoenix Force as well.
So, mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm a big Rachel Summers guy. Big fan. Big fan. All right, so, yeah, the cover's great. Yeah. Oh, did you describe it yet?
Never got into it, yeah. So we got a big blue background. This is the one kind of weak part of the cover for me, is just the wasted space in the background. There's just a lot of, you know, action lines. We could have done a little bit of background work, but other than that, it looks great. We got Nimrod. He's kind of got Juggernaut held up just with one hand.
Yeah.
This guy's a beast. He's holding Juggernaut up. Juggernaut's down to his skull cap. His big helmet's gone already. But Juggernaut looks defeated. Meanwhile, Nimrod's just blasting away at Rogue, or I guess it's Rogue, because it's wearing Rogue's costume and has Rogue's hair, but it's got a Nightcrawler face and steel arms and legs.
Yeah, like Colossus. Like,
oh, yeah, she's been absorbing a lot of powers, it looks like.
Yeah, what's going on here? Yeah, I like this cover a lot. And
you want to open the book and find out.
Yeah. What's going on there? So we open it up and we see.
We should mention, like, what kind of name is Nimrod? I mean, it sounds cool. For
well,
like, a Nimrod's like something you yell at somebody in traffic when they're being.
Well, no. Nimrod is actually, from olden days, is a famous hunter, Nimrod. So it makes perfect sense that Nimrod is hunting mutants. So, yeah.
And yeah, it become the pejorative that we know it as.
Yes, I'm not aware of that. But yeah, originally it was a. Legendary hunter. So, so we open up in the first page. We don't get a traditional splash page. We get a page with five horizontal panels, and we see it's New York City, and we see a guy walking closer to the camera there, and we see a bunch of police stuff going on in the sideline. We see a cop here telling people, calm down, calm down. And it's a big fella walking towards the camera. He's enormous, and he's got hair.
Quite large.
And he says, hey, officer, what's the trouble? And the cop says, ain't you heard, fella? And then we turn the page. Now we get a big splash page of the cop turning and saying, Juggernaut's back in town. And we just see old Juggernaut standing behind him. Now, if you're on the lookout for a Juggernaut.
Yeah.
Maybe this enormous.
Maybe the guy who is like the size of the Hulk.
Yes. And he's wearing like a Bill Cosby sweater. I don't know what's going on there. But, yeah, maybe this guy. Take a look at this guy. He might be the Juggernaut. So.
I mean, do they know who the Juggernaut is at this point? Like, I'm guessing he has never been arrested and, like, you know, photographed without his helmet on.
Yeah, but I mean, just shape-wise. You know, like, if someone says, hey, we're looking for Bob Denver, and I walk down the street, they're going, hey, look, it's Bob Denver. No, but I mean, if you're looking for Juggernaut, that guy looks like Juggernaut.
Yeah.
But we see
the size of three football players combined. Yeah, it's probably him.
We see a newscast, but he is wearing the sweater and stylish khakis. So,
The Juggernaut wouldn't do that. And don't ask about where his helmet is, because
yes, same place where Christopher Walken kept that pocket watch in Pulp Fiction.
Yeah.
All right. So anyway, we see a newscaster on the steps there of City Hall or whatever, and he's broadcasting a report on Juggernauts in town. He gives you all the backstory on who Juggernaut is, how he's fought the X-Men and the Hulk and Spider-Man. And
recapping just all these appearances, all these recent appearances at least.
And then Juggernaut just walks away, and no one seems suspicious at all that this guy's a Juggernaut. All right, so now we
These dumbasses. How do they not know I'm joking now?
Cut to Xavier's mansion. And where is that again? In Westchester? Is that where it is?
Westchester. Yeah. Gray Malkin Lane.
There it is, Gray Malkin Lane. And we see old Nightcrawler. He's sleeping, you know, and he's like, oh, I'm so sleepy. Yeah,
he's the team leader, I guess, right now, currently. Because, you know, Cyclops left, and then Storm lost her powers and left. So it's kind of fallen to Nightcrawler.
Yeah.
He doesn't seem like he wants to do it at this point, but he ends up becoming the leader of Excalibur, so clearly he gets the bug eventually.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Leader of Excalibur, huh?
Yeah.
Because in my day of Excalibur, Captain Burton was the only guy, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, Nightcrawler was just a better leader. He took over.
Yeah. All right, so, but he hears on the news, now the radio's brought in, or the TV's on, and they're talking about Juggernaut, and he's like, no, I just want to go back to bed. I don't want to fight Juggernaut. Let someone else handle it. And
they really should have in this case, turns out. Juggernaut's not doing anything.
And we see Kitty Pryde, and she's in there with her roommate, Ilyana Rasputin, and they're sleeping. And Kitty phases into the alarm clock there to shut it up, because she does not want to get up. They're all sleepy. Yep. And now we see Colossus in his bright yellow pajamas.
Like, what does she have an alarm for? Class, I guess? That they never seem to do.
Just long, like, to be lazy, you know? Gotta get up. And, yeah, Colossus, we see his room. He's got a bunch of weights and everything, you know, and his art easel and his palette. Yeah. And his bright yellow pajamas.
Probably got a bunch of naked X-Men pictures in that he's been painting. He always seemed to be doing.
And here we get a lot of exposition here. Awkward exposition in Colossus's internal monologue.
Yep. You have to set up where everyone is in their life in this, morning.
I wish Professor Xavier were here. There's so much I need to talk to him about. But he was summoned to Muir Owl almost the moment we returned from Cheyenne Mountain. That's something you usually say to yourself in an internal monologue, reminding yourself what happened to Xavier.
He's like, I didn't perform well against the Hellions, so I feel bad now.
Yeah, the Hellions. They were like the new mutants of the evil mutant world.
Yeah, like he was leading them. They were like her pupils.
Yeah, they just had a big fight in issue 193. It's like a double-sized issue, I believe.
Yeah, that's where Warpath first debuted, I believe.
Yep.
Thunderbird's brother.
And I guess the X-Men, there was some sort of a debacle that happened, and the X-Men got blamed for it. But anyway, Colossus, he wants to fight Juggernaut, you know? Because he's like, the last time we fought at the bar, he got the better of me in the bar there. So, I want to go at him again. So he pops out of his pajamas. He just turns metal and boom, bursts his pajamas.
Yep.
Now, Jank, we get Rachel Summers. Why don't you catch us up on Rachel?
She's basically just sitting there, like, holding a picture of her dad and, I don't know if it's Jean or Madeline.
Yeah, it's got to be Jean, right? It's got to be.
Yeah, I guess so.
But I think
she's
Madeline.
Like, everyone's dead. Franklin's dead. Kate's dead. Like, everyone's dead. And I'm never going to exist here because Jean Grey died years ago. So I can't be born. Sad for me. I feel like they do this every issue with her. Like, okay, get it. You have any other personality other than this?
And now we cut to Rogue in the shower. You always got to show a lady taking a shower. And she's covering up all, as best she can. And they're all here in the news.
Sugar, don't look our way. The X-Men have earned a day off.
Yeah.
We're not going to deal with this Juggernaut bullshit.
The Juggernaut do whatever he wants. And then we cut to Wolverine. He's out jogging in the snow just in his pajamas without any shoes on.
Barefoot. I mean, I know you're Wolverine and you can heal from this kind of thing, but why put yourself through that? That sounds awful.
He's a badass now. He studied with the samurais and stuff now. So he's pretty good. Oh, yeah, see Secret Wars and Kitty Wolverine Limited Series. Yeah, they are just back. So Kitty is kind of a ninja now. And but he somehow, even though he's out jogging in the woods, he knows about the Juggernaut. Because, did he have a radio with him? I don't know, but anyway.
He must have watched the early news. He's been up for hours, so he watched it, at probably 1 a.m.
So he goes upstairs and he's knocking on Kurt's door there, Nightcrawler, and he's like, hey, Elf, we got to take care of Juggernaut, you know? And
on your funny, fuzzy feet.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird. A little cutesy for Wolverine talk.
And, well, he's already smoking a dart, so that makes it tougher.
Yeah. And, that does make it cooler.
And Nightcrawler says, all right, give me a minute. I want to shower and get ready or whatever. So now we cut to Africa, Kenya, to be exact. And we see those Von Strucker twins.
Yeah. Fenrising it up.
They're out on like some safari. And Andrea is outside with some fellas sitting at a table. And Andreas is inside. And he's getting handsy with a waitress at a little, I don't know. Wonder how many bars are just in the middle of Kenya. Just,
yeah. Yeah, not a whole lot in this town, it looks like, but I bet it's just like Cheers.
Everybody knows your name. Yep. So, just then, though, Jack, who comes in to save the day?
Well, here comes Storm, but don't get too excited. She doesn't have any powers, so you're all probably screwed if these guys try to do anything.
Well, she is packing a knife and a giant stick. So,
yeah.
And she's got like a very little clothing on. She's basically a towel belted around her waist. And then she has her head like a scarf around her head, so you don't see the mohawk. Mm-hmm. But some of Andreas Strucker's fellows step in to say, hey, why don't you shut up, lady? Mind your own business. She just whacks him in the face with a big stick.
Yep. Boom. Bow staff in the face.
So that's pretty cool. And but then Andreas Strucker gives her a spear from behind like Roman Reigns and takes her down into the dirt. And but then she elbows in the face and Andreas Strucker pulls out a gun and
yep. Storm disarms her with a knife.
Yeah, whips around and throws a knife and it goes right into her hair, pins it to the wall. She's like, I could have killed you, lady, if I wanted. But that's what you always say when you miss. I could have killed you if I wanted.
Yeah. I meant to do that.
Then Storm picks up one of the shotguns that the guys she hit in the face with the stick dropped. And she tells him, you get out of here, you punks. And don't come back now, you hear?
And then as soon as they get in the car, this is when they should hold hands and come back and just blast with their fucking powers.
That's a good point. But they do not do that. They actually take off. And Storm's like, hey, they're probably going to come back, so you might want to prepare for that. I'm not going to be here. But and the waitress says, oh, Aurora, the wind goddess, or what she called the wind rock.
Her prayers are answered, like, oh, our droughts are going to end now. We're going to be able to grow crops. She's like, yeah, about that.
Yeah, for those who don't remember, she lost her powers because she was zapped. Wasn't it Henry Gyrish, I believe, who shot her with a gun? That
yeah, that Forge made.
Yeah, that Forge made. And Storm pushed Rogue out of the way, and she got zapped, and she lost her powers. And then later she met Forge, and she fell in love with Forge, and then she found out, oh, wait, Forge was the guy who designed that gun, and he works for Gyrish. So I'm leaving you, Forge. And so basically this whole time, Storm's away from the team for a good a year, probably.
At least a year, yeah, probably. Yeah.
And they would just cut to her in the issue. She's wandering through Africa trying to reclaim her spirit, you know, and her identity. Just figure out where she is now. She has no powers. Like, who is she, you know? So.
Yeah. Yeah, that's my least favorite story in any comics is when someone loses their powers. I'm like,
well, I think this is my interest in this. But here it works in the X-Men because, you know, she has one character, you know. So not seeing every issue. But, like, you're just getting a little snippet of it here and there. But
yeah, like Peter Parker, and we had to spend a whole year without his powers. And be like, oh, yeah, boy. I don't want to see him going to work every day. This is like
but if you're just spending a couple pages an issue on Storm, and Storm's powers are so much connected to her and nature, and you know all that kind of stuff, so it really is a big thing for her. And she does end up getting her powers back eventually, but it takes a while. It takes a while.
Yeah, it's not till like the Fall of the Mutants, I believe. Yeah. That's like 25 around there.
So now we cut back to Juggernaut at the bank. He's trying to get that free toaster. And they show him sitting at a bank, at a desk, with like a bank employee. And he is enormous.
He really is.
Like, any luck finding the
Nobody
is,
yeah. Huh, I wonder.
It's this guy.
This mild-mannered reporter. The size of a truck.
So Kitty and Rachel Summers are inside the bank, too, and they're just keeping an eye on him.
Because I guess he doesn't know that. They're new.
And Rogue and Nightcrawler are up on a rooftop next to the bank, and Kitty is conversing with them and keeping them up to date. And
he's not trying to rob the place yet, so what do we do?
He's just conducting business. And then Nightcrawler's like, all right, well, this might work out for us. Just let him go. He's not doing anything. Cool.
Yeah.
Colossus and Wolverine are in an alleyway, and Colossus, again, with a yellow hoodie, like a poncho or a sweatshirt.
Yeah.
He loves yellow, this Colossus.
Sure does. Yeah. I don't know when that started, but...
But then we see, we get three panels at the bottom of the page of, they're all in pink, and we're seeing, like, an overview of New York there, and it's getting closer and closer, and it's Nimrod. Bam! He shows up inside the bank, and he's like, I am Nimrod. Criminals are at large within these premises. A threat situation exists. It is my duty to deal with them. And he looks like a badass. Yeah, he's the ultimate sentinel. He has every power imaginable. He always like analyzes the situation, realizes what he needs, and he does it.
He can like adapt to anything. Basically, if you do something once, I think he'll find a way to get around it.
Yep. And Nightcrawler found that out the hard way the next time they fight. But
the whole point.
So he identifies Kane Marco there, and Kitty and Rachel Summers. And Rachel Summers is the one he's here to get, But he doesn't seem all that interested in her, really, You think he would be like, oh, there's Rachel Summers. So I came back to get.
He also doesn't seem to know anything about him. She'd never seen one of these Sentinels in her future?
Yeah, that's what I was confused about.
Kitty's like, who is this guy? How did he know about us? She's like, how should I know?
Or is she still trying to play, like, they know she's from the future, right? Or is she playing fast and loose?
She definitely told him about that.
Yeah, it seems weird that neither one recognizes the other. So Juggernaut, he tries to go at Nimrod, and Nimrod just blasts him with his energy ray, and it, like, melts off the Cliff Huxtable sweater and stylish khakis, and he's got his Juggernaut uniform underneath. He still doesn't have his helmet on, though.
With the helmet tucked into his
pants. Yeah, I just noticed that.
He would have a giant pot belly. This thing is not like one of those folding hats you get at the Waffle House. Like, this is a giant metal dome.
That's what I always thought, but maybe it is some space age. I just noticed all these years. I just noticed that helmet melt. So maybe it's like some space age material. It folds up, and then when it expands, it gets steel tough.
I wonder if this thing keeps coming off. Like, why couldn't you just give him a duffel bag? Like, you just walk around with a duffel bag full of his, his bits.
But I liked also Juggernaut. He's got these big things on his hands, like these big bands around the palms of his hands, and those have been there the whole time, even when he's at the bank filling out paperwork.
Right. Giant, like, brass knuckle things. Boy, I wish we could find that Juggernaut guy.
can't find him anywhere. Wow, that is crazy that his mask is tucked in his pants. Never saw that. Sorry, anyway. So Rachel's protecting her and Kitty with a little telekinetic force field there. She's like, hey, I can't keep this up. So Kitty phases her down through the floor of the bank, and they end up down in the vault. And Rachel's having trouble, though, because she's sensing all the panic and fear of the people in the bank. She's having trouble keeping them out of her head. And I don't know. Kitty floats back up, and she's like, hey, I'll get them out of the bank. I'll try and calm them down or whatever. I don't know.
I think she pretty much tells Rachel, like, hey, use your powers on him, calm him down, and stuff like that. Like, oh, okay. Let's just invade lots of people's minds. Cool, cool.
Kitty helps people get out of the bank there, and Nimrod's still shooting at Juggernaut. Juggernaut puts the helmet on now. And
I don't know why he's so intent on taking on Juggernaut when he's not a mutant.
Yeah, I guess just because he's a criminal, and Nimrod's kind of like a futuristic cop, I guess. I don't know. But
I mean, at least in the future, they're depicted. I think, like, the Sentinels pretty much took over. Like, they just killed everybody at a certain point. Like, it wasn't even mutants anymore. They're just like, yeah, you know, everyone's kind of evil. We're just going to take you all out.
So Nimrod, eventually, he hits him with some sort of a special laser bolt, and it shoots Juggernaut right through the side of the building. Whammo! And he goes flying.
Good sound effect.
And he ends up at a construction site with a Juggernaut.
Surprised. He's like, I thought only the Hulk could pull a stunt like that.
Nimrod hits hard. So now Nimrod flies to the construction site. Juggernaut picks up a steel I-beam to hit him with it. But what happens, Jack?
Oh, Nimrod hits it with a disintegrator beam and just, you know, destroys it. Juggernaut's like, oh boy, glad that wasn't me.
Nimrod means business. He's trying to kill me. And Nimrod says, of course, haven't I made my intentions plain? This isn't how Nimrod talks to me. Like,
he's very flippant. Like, it's not very robot-y.
Yeah. I recall him talking more robot-y, I think.
But, yeah, that could just be memory playing
tricks.
Yeah, I
think so. But, I'll have to go read that at 208, 209, because those are maybe he's more robot-y in that one. But so eventually Nimrod just throws a bunch of I-beams and debris on top of Juggernaut. Mm-hmm. And he says,
very long, he just kind of throws it all away and like, that's your best shot, Buster. You're in a whole lot of trouble.
See, this is like in the internal discussion of Nimrod. This is how I usually running comparison evaluation of reference that in my memory banks. Juggernaut was struck by 1.37 kilotons of steel. He should emerge fundamentally unharmed now. And then Juggernaut busts through. And now the X-Men show up. And
yeah, Nightcrawler kind of in the weird position of having to like defend the Juggernaut, I guess.
Yeah.
Because Nimrod seems like the bigger threat.
And Nightcrawler, for some reason, decides to teleport him and a Colossus who is still in human form. Seems questionable. I mean, might want to turn metal by this point, but all right, whatever.
Yeah. Yep. You're fighting, you know, you've been wanting to fight the Juggernaut and stuff, like maybe you steal up.
And for some reason, they decide to teleport like next to Nimrod or something, but Nimrod predicts where they're going to teleport, and he zaps them as soon as they materialize.
Yeah, they were not thinking. Not at all.
And then Wolverine says, hey, Rogue, fastball special. I always like the fastball special.
Yeah, it's weird seeing Rogue do it. Yeah, usually it's all Colossus, but I guess Rogue will work in a pinch.
Called in Rogue from the bullpen. She came in through the fastball special. But Wolverine, he goes up, and Nimrod has a big force field there, and he can't cut through it, and it like knocks him loopy. Sends him down into the ground. KOs him for a bit. But Nimrod, he has to have been doing some scouting on Juggernaut, though, Jen, because what does he do?
Oh, yeah, Juggernaut tries to spear him, but he kind of ducks it a little bit and gives him a karate chop right to the helmet, knocks it off, sends it flying. So Juggernaut's down to his little skull cap. He's like, my helmet, but its seal was supposed to be unbreakable. Tom promised.
Yeah, Black Tom, Tom,
expert at metallurgy.
Why would you trust Black Tom? His name's Black Tom. He didn't get that because he's honest, you know? The shady fella. He's going to lie to you. But, yes, now that the helmet's off, Nimrod hits him with some sort of, is it an audio thing?
Ultra-high frequency sonics.
Yeah. And it's really monkeying with Juggernaut's brain there, knocking him loopy. And Kitty Pryde sneaking around behind him. She's like, oh, I can even hear it. It's bothering me.
Yeah.
Nimrod spins around.
Oh, bad as Macy Gray.
Tries to kill Kitty. Kitty phases through the lightning bolt or laser bolt there. And then this part confused me as well. Because Kitty can always phase into things. And if they're electronic, she can disrupt them, you know?
Disrupt them.
And so she's like, hey, I want to see this. Is Joker's wearing a suit of armor or something? And she's, you know, phases into his chest. And it doesn't really bother him at all. And she goes, whoa, that's a robot. Well, if it was a robot, shouldn't it have bothered him that you did that?
Yeah, I guess maybe it's future tech and somehow he's got the power to counteract every ability. So I guess he found a way to counteract this. But yeah, it is very strange. That should have shut him down right there.
So he hits her with some different laser beam out of his chest or something. And it solidifies her and it like she's still conscious. But she has no control over her body. Like, it short-circuited her nervous system or something. So
she's kind of a drooling mess. Like, yeah, she looks like she's had, you know, about 12 beers.
But Rogue catches her, thankfully, so she doesn't splat. And then we see Rachel Summers. She comes in and she uses her telekinetic powers to rip up a bunch of steel girders and drop them on Nimrod. And this apparently really startles Kitty Pryde there. She's like, oh my God, Rachel Summers could have killed him. Could have killed that robot.
I just tried to kill by putting my hands into its chest.
She's taken aback, though, that Rachel could be so bloodthirsty to kill a robot like that. But but she summons all her strength to touch Rogue's face with her forehead so Rogue can absorb her memories and everything and her powers so that she can learn everything that Kitty knows about Nimrod, that Nimrod is a robot.
Yeah. And Kitty's come up with a plan to fight him, but she can't tell Rogue because she can't talk right now. So she's going to give Rogue that too. And Rogue's like, oh, okay. I get it now.
So
yeah, she find all the X-Men that are, you know, screwing about, laying unconscious. And she goes to touch Nightcrawler and Colossus as well. She's going to grab their powers.
Yeah, she leaves Wolverine alone. She's like, I don't like to be, I don't want to be that hairy. She hits Colossus and Nightcrawler. So now, yeah, she's still in her Rogue costume, but she's got the steel arms and legs of Colossus, the steel body of Colossus, but a Nightcrawler face. And she didn't get
kinda
the tail.
Weird. I don't know why. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. This probably wasn't the best way to draw this. He probably should have had her all be steel, but kind of like a blue steel, maybe.
I don't know. I think this is pretty cool. I like it.
It's kind of weird that just certain features hit certain parts of your body. I don't know. Like, her face is not steel at all. That seems very vulnerable.
So Nimrod comes out from underneath all the steel girders, and he's dragging Juggernaut with him. Juggernaut's KO'd. And Rogue teleports behind him with an I-beam and conks him over the head, ba-kong, over the back of the head. And keep in mind, she's now strong as Rogue and Colossus. So
yeah, that's pretty strong.
Yeah, that's really strong. And then I guess this is Kitty's plan that she had. She grabs Nimrod's arm, and then she teleports just a portion of his body. She just teleports his arm.
Just the arm, yep.
Nightcrawler apparently did this to Magus. Was that his name? Warlock's daddy?
Yeah. Yep. And, mechanic being, yeah.
And that's where this plan comes from. And she rips off his arm, and Nimrod starts, like, short-circuiting and going screwy. And then she punches him right in the belly and kind of like just shatters him. Boom.
Yeah.
So Nimrod's dead, right? He's dead. No more worries.
Oh, yeah. Totally defeated. We'll never see him again. Not in 208 and 209 for sure, because he's dead. But no, he just immediately puts himself back together.
Yeah, he starts reassembling himself. But I guess he is wounded enough that he's like, all right. And he just takes off. He teleports.
My break's almost over at the construction site.
I gotta get back. My foreman will never let me hear the end of it.
Yeah. So got a wife and two kids to feed.
And so he just leaves and teleports away or whatever. And there's just big flash of light. He can't teleport, right? But there's a flash of light and he flies away. I don't know.
Yeah.
Whatever.
I guess he does the same thing Shazam did.
Shazam, yeah.
Yeah. Blind him and fly away.
Puts his body back with super friction. So, anyway, Juggernaut wakes up, and he's like, all right, now you ex-bums want to fight me? And she's like, hey, we just saved your life there, buddy. You know, why don't you calm down?
And, even though this whole thing was our fault, like, I think Nimrod was just really attracted to our mutant energy signatures. So if we hadn't shown up, you would have just gone to the bank. And
yeah, I was just trying to do my banking. Oh, yeah, he calls them ex-chumps. That's a good one. You ex-chumps. But, yeah, he just leaves. And Rogue's like, hey, don't say thanks or nothing. Yeah, jerk.
But yeah, this is all your fault. I'm starting to see why the public doesn't like the X-Men after this issue. It's like, yep, this all could have been avoided if you just stayed home.
So the X-Men gather up their wounded. Their Rogue
picks up Nightcrawler. Take the Morlock tunnels home.
Yeah, this is when the Morlocks were still a thing. Enjoy those Morlock tunnels while you can, kids. It's going to be a slaughterhouse in about, 16 issues.
Yep.
That's Yeah, so they go back to the mansion there, and now we cut to a little epilogue here, one-page epilogue.
Yeah, what an exciting way to end your issue.
I wanted to ask you about it. Guys. So basically, we're seeing Russian Nick Fury. There's a Russian agent, and he's got an eye patch just like Nick Fury, which is strange. And
yep. Can't be a spy. Got both eyes. That's just science.
And these Russian guys are talking. And they're like, hey, yeah, the Juggernaut, the X-Men, the reports in all media depict the X-Men as criminals, aiding one of their own Juggernaut to escape. Their antagonist, Nimrod, is being held as a hero. I like that. I like that. It's kind of like the Spider-Man thing, you know, like, no matter what he does, he's seen as a criminal. The X-Men are always seen as outlaws, even though they're trying to save everybody. Nimrod's a hero. And so they're basically having this discussion, and they're saying, hey, the U.S., they're turning their backs on a very powerful force here in the X-Men. Maybe us Russian folks should cozy up with the X-Men and, you know, use this to our advantage. And this other fella, I can't remember his name. I even researched him. Oh, Colonel Vashon. Colonel Vashon.
Yeah, he was definitely an ongoing character for sure. Like, Chris Claremont would bring him back from time to time. Chris Claremont loved putting in these random human characters that nobody cared about.
Yeah, this guy, his first appearance was like a Marvel team-up back in the 70s or something was his first appearance. And then, so when I read this, I was like, wait, I don't remember them following up on this at all. And so then his next appearance isn't until like X-Men 240 or something. So it's like they did nothing with this. This little epilogue.
Yeah.
Nothing. So. But
yeah, again, this is just, it seems like one of those kind of Days of Future Past type things where it's like, oh, I feel like something bad's happening. Because he ends it basically by saying, you know, we are fast approaching a crossroads, Sasha, and I fear that somehow, somewhere, the decision has already been made to turn us irrevocably towards Armageddon. So it's just kind of like, oh, see, you know, we could be heading towards Days of Future Past here.
Yeah, there's some big story coming on the pike, and then but I read that, and I'm like, well, I don't remember anything about this happening. And then, yeah, he doesn't even show up again for, like, another 50 issues or something. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, all right, fair enough.
You know, he would pop up from time to time. Like, I think when Colossus' family was all murdered in Russia, like, I'm pretty sure he was somewhere involved in that story.
But, yeah, so there it is. That's how the issue ends. I'm not sure if we need the epilogue. Could have done without that.
Yeah.
But,
yeah, definitely a weird way to end the issue for sure. didn't add a whole lot.
But overall, though, I love this. John Romita's art here is great. Claremont, the writing is clunky at times. You know,
yeah, for sure. It's Nimrod pretty. Talks kind of funny at this point. Like, stick with the real stuff, less, you know, at the witty banter.
But I love the beginning when all the X-Men are in their mansion, they're waking up. I love that.
That is classic Claremont. Just kind of check in with everybody and see what they're up to at this point.
Just show like them being normal people, you know? And I love that. Juggernaut just going to the bank, open up a checking account. That's awesome.
Yep.
No one can know.
His helmet in his pants.
No one recognizes the Juggernaut is walking around. So crazy. Nimrod showing up. Nimrod was
bad. I didn't know how they knew the Juggernaut was in town, but didn't know like anything about him. Like, how do you know that if he's not dressed as the Juggernaut and you can't recognize him? How did you even know he was in town? Did he put out a press release like, "Hey, I'm coming to the bank.
Juggernaut's coming to town." And you got to see Rachel Summers drop a bunch of high beams on him and stuff. That's cool. But yeah, Rogue absorbing their powers. That is awesome. And then teleporting away.
That is
awesome. So, so in issue 208 or whatever, 209, when they fight Nimrod again, the X-Men, they're having troubles with Nimrod, and Nightcrawler says, I remember, I'll do what Rogue did, and I'll teleport a portion of his body. But a couple differences, Rogue was Rogue, so she's naturally stronger, and she was also Colossus. So, like, her body could withstand that a little better. Nightcrawler
tries.
She
doesn't say that in this. She's like, if Crawler did that, he would, you know, be knocked out for sure, or he'd be dead.
But they're getting handed, you know, by Nightcrawler. So, like, all right, I'll try it. And it does not go well for him. I guess Nimrod anticipated it, so he does something and, like, zaps him. So Nightcrawler teleports, and it just, he gets all messed up from it somehow. And then, like, what, the next issue, they're down in the tunnels, and he gets...
Masquerade gets messed up more.
Yeah. Riptide hits him with all those ninja stars.
Yeah, that's a bit
of... No, no, no. Riptide was Colossus. Harpoon was the one that hit Nightcrawler, right?
I think Harpoon hit Kitty, right? While she was phasing with like an energy harpoon.
You're right. I think Riptide hit Nightcrawler too. Maybe Riptide hit them both.
Oh, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah, I was thinking Harpoon hit him with that. But yeah, Harpoon hit Kitty, and then she couldn't phase out anymore. She was always phased. Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, poor Nightcrawler. Rough stretch.
Yeah. At least he wasn't leading the team at that point. Storm would come back to take the reins again, even without her powers.
But I love this Aaron. I love this issue. This was great stuff. What do you think, Jay?
Yeah, it's pretty solid. Like I said, I like the Juggernaut putting his helmet in his pants. That was ridiculous. When I saw that, I was like, give him a bag or a backpack or something. Or just have him like be something you can magically turn into, like, and just go from clothes to regular to Juggernaut. Like, he's got a magical gem. I'd buy that. But the fact that he stuck this thing in his, like, the hem of his pants, like, I'm not buying that.
I just can't believe all like back when I was a kid and I read it, I never noticed it. Last night when I read this, I never noticed. But yeah, this helmet is tucked in his pants. It's crazy. And you think he would tuck it in the back of the pants, right? Like, but he tucked it in the front of the pants. That's even weirder. All right, but anyway. Yeah, so what do you think, Jack? 1 out of 10 for Uncanny X-Men 194?
It's a good question. The art is fantastic. Not my favorite issue of the X-Men, but I'll give it a solid 7.
Oh, man, I love this. the writing was a little not as good as I would have liked. But I like the bits with Storm, too. I like that.
Yeah, again, like non-power parts, usually not for me.
I like it. So I'm going 9 on this.
Ooh, wow.
Because this is right out of my wheelhouse, my favorite era of the X-Men. All right, so I have a question about Storm, though, before we go, Cenk. So Storm in this issue, she's in Africa, and I think in issue 196-ish, 197-ish. No, you know what? It's 196. She gets shot in the head by Andrea Zucker, Von Strucker, Zucker, whatever.
Yikes.
she gets shot in the head because those Von Struckers, they don't let anything slide. So they find her like on their safari, and she snipes her from a distance and hits her in the head. Now, it's not a clean headshot. It's just a graze or whatever, you know. And they leave her to die, though, in the outback or whatever, the African safari. And, like, at the end of issue 197, she comes to, and the buzzards are coming to kill her, and she says, you can't kill me yet. So then issue 198 is Love and Death Part 2. Yeah. And that was, because Part 1 was the first time with Forge, and Barry Windsor-Smith drew both of those issues. And so it's just about her in Africa recovering from the headshot and, like, coming to grips with who she is now that she doesn't have powers. And she, at the end, she decides, you know, I'm going to soar higher than ever, even though I don't have powers. Now I'm going to go back and do whatever. So then issue 199 is, we mentioned earlier, with Rachel Summers tapping into the Phoenix Force. And then that same issue at the end of it, the Freedom Force, who are the Mystique and the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants, they arrest Magneto.
That's and right.
So then issue 200 is the trial of Magneto. Oh. And then at the, so when Storm is not in issue 199, then issue 200, in the beginning of the Trial of Magneto, the X-Men were actually in Asgard for their annual. And at the beginning of 200, they just materialize in Paris, whatever, and they're all wearing, like, Asgardian costumes and stuff. They just stuff where, so, and Storm's with them. So Storm comes back to the team during that annual, and she's, like, Loki's bride or what? Like, Loki's all in love with Storm.
Yeah.
And remember all that?
I think she temporarily gets her powers back because, yeah, she's, like, kind of Thored out.
Yeah, he gives her Mjolnir or whatever, a helmet or a hammer like that.
Yeah.
So, but I, like, I didn't read the issue. I just flipped through it, and I see no mention of, like, no one, like, she's just back on the
shot in the head.
Yeah, like, how did she go from the Australian, or, I keep saying Australian, African safari, like, out in the wilderness there or whatever, and then she's just with them in Asgard. And then, like, in 200, there's no mention that, oh, yeah, Storm's back with us. Like, it's like, what? How? What? I don't.
I'm guessing Loki just grabbed her from Africa. He's like, hey.
You think they would mention that at some point, though? I don't know.
Yeah.
Because I tried to, maybe it's in there, but I flipped through pretty good, and I didn't see any opportunities for it. And then, of course, issue 201, she fights Cyclops for the leadership of the X-Men, even though she doesn't have her powers. And she beats him.
Right. So that's pretty, that's a real big L for Cyclops right there. Like,
yeah, they have a little.
Cyclops. Like, we should do that issue someday with him and be like, here's your boy Cyclops getting his ass handed to him by a lady who doesn't have powers.
They have a little duel in the danger room, and Storm sneaks around and sneaks up behind him. She uses her belt to trip him. And then when he falls, she grabs his visor. And she says, all right, yeah, you're done now. You can't control your eye beams. You don't want to, you lost. And he's like, all right, I just opened my eyes and spin around. And now I won.
Yep. So now, now you're dead. It's all right.
Cyclops just accepts defeat, which seems odd. But all right. So, yeah, I just wanted to see if you remember how Storm got back with the team. But because if am I missing something or.
Definitely in that annual, but I think because. Once they were all in Asgard, it didn't matter how they got there. They were just kind of.
But when they grabbed them off, just pick her
from wherever they were.
Yeah, I don't know. It's odd.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's she already kind of was used to the powers of Thor, kind of because of the weather controlling stuff. So.
But you think like this has been like a year long storyline, a saga of her losing her powers and you know coming to grips with it, and then she just appears back on the team and no one mentions it. I don't know. Strange.
Gotta be like some kind of a, you know, they all see each other again in that annual and hug or something.
I didn't see it. because she's like brainwashed the whole time by Loki, and she doesn't really come into who she is until like the last couple pages of it. So anyway, also issue 197, Dr. Doom is involved, but I think it might just be Arcade, right? Pulling shenanigans.
Oh, yeah, that sounds about right.
And you see Storm on the cover with the X-Men, but she is not in that issue at all, even though she's on the cover.
So much false advertising going on.
Yeah, there's a lot of weird stuff going on, so I don't know. Well, she's in the issue, but not with the X-Men. Like, I think at the end is when she rises up from the buzzers or whatever. But, like, she's – like, they show her in costume fighting the Doctor Doom or whatever. So,
yep, looking at it right now. Yeah, she's definitely not with the team, that's for sure.
And isn't she flying as well on that cover, so she didn't even have her powers?
Yep.
So maybe it was an Arcade robot.
Yeah, maybe. We'll go with that.
A lot of weird stuff there. All right, so there it is. There's your X-Men's talk for a week. All right, Cenk, pick us a winner. What do you got?
Okay, well, we're not going to go back to the well this time. We're going to try another one of these random characters and see how it goes.
Oh, no.
50-50 shot here. This is a character I'm pretty sure most people are familiar with. I know, I'm sure we both are, even though I don't think either of us have read this comic before. But he's big, he's blue. We're going to go with the Tick.
From the 80s? He was around?
Yeah, yep. The Tick, number 3, as far as I can tell, it's from 1988.
Wow, I was thinking he's a 90s guy.
Yeah. So this is an issue where he teams up with a lady ninja who is totally not Elektra.
I like
her name is Oedipus. Get it?
Oh,
totally
yeah.
Different.
But I like the Tick. He had a TV show. He had a cartoon and everything. Yeah.
Two TV shows. Yeah. And a cartoon show. Yeah.
All right. Well, this will be interesting. I've never read any Tick. So.
Me neither. I'm excited to read some. Because it's written and drawn by the same guy, so real passion project for that guy.
Yeah, kind of like this here podcast. So, all right, that'll be next week. And again, if you're watching on YouTube, please like and subscribe. Lord knows we need the support. Good God. Anyway, all right, so until next week, don't get any jank on you.